7 decades of great music, Z103.com. It's time for episode number 14 of the Basics in Economic Development. Mark Wickersham, good morning.
Hey, good morning. I think the last time we talked about there was a mourning dove hanging around your place, has the Easter Bunny been by yet?
He has not, but I think the mourning dove is still there.
Okay. The storms this week didn't scare him off.
Scare him off, and neither did me trying to reach for him. But okay. I mean, anyway, what's going on today?
Well, with all the rain that we've had this past couple of days, I do want to spend some time talking about our water capacity report.
I'm ready.
HQ commissioned a water capacity study. We've spoken before about the fact that for any community to be viable, whether we're talking about economic development or what, just living together, it's absolutely critical to have safe, clean drinking water available in capacities which, you know, support the population's demands and expectations. And one of those expectations is to do it affordably. But we need good quality water. And we've also discussed how access to water and the infrastructure assets that we have actually could be placed at risk depending on other users on the aquifers that we tap, combined with economic growth. And sometimes there are communities that do economic growth not really strategically, but just based on the idea that bigger's better. And sometimes when you do that sort of thought, you can stress infrastructure opportunities. So we thought it was really important for us as a community and as an economic development group to have a thorough understanding of, in this case, our water infrastructure and how we get the water to our faucets and taps and commercial activities. So we hired Lockmuller Group of Fort Wayne to put together a consumption and design capacity report for us, and they recently completed that report and presented it to our board. So I wanted to take a few minutes to share some of the highlights. Among the things that we learned, there are 11 municipal water towers in Huntington County. Who knew, right?
I did not know there were that many.
Yep, and those 11 towers have a combined storage capacity of 4,350,000 gallons of water.
Man.
Now, water towers are used primarily at an elementary level for two purposes. Number one, you elevate water to create the gravity pressure on your actual water system and your water mains in a community. So the easiest way to create that pressure, instead of doing it with mechanical, machines or whatever, you elevate the storage and let gravity do its thing. Sometimes that takes a lot of storage capacity, depending on the size of the community. But the second thing that towers are used for is to have at least one day of water usage demand on storage, in particular because what happens if you have a major fire event? And the fire departments we saw that in California earlier this year where the wildfires, it literally consumed almost every gallon of water capacity that they had, and they couldn't pump it fast enough to fight the fires. So those are the two primary reasons. There are a lot of other dynamics that go into having water towers and why and what for, et cetera. But those are the elementary reasons. And then we learned about construction costs. I mean, how much does it cost to build a big water tower?
I have no idea, but it's quite a lot.
It's just like anything else. They're getting more expensive every day, and those inflationary factors are sometimes pretty hard to manage for a community and their ratepayers. But for example, the water tower on Bryant Street in Huntington is the largest. It's the oldest and largest tower that we have in the city of Huntington, and it's a million-gallon tank, elevated storage. If you had to build that new right now, you're going to spend over $5 million to construct that.
Whoa!
So they're getting really expensive. Now, the Huntington County municipality is also based on the report we've learned. We know this, but we sort of are taking a lot for granted. We get our water from water wells, just like you would if you were in the countryside and you've got a rural home and you drill a well to tap water, to get water available for your house. Well, and they're radically larger, but that's exactly what municipal units of government and their water systems do. They have a number of wells tapped into a number of aquifers that provide the water for us to consume. Cities and towns in Huntington County have a combined total of 22 wells, and those create a combined capacity of 8,293,000 gallons per day. 8,293,000 gallons per day.
My goodness.
Now, the study was recommended to us by, Commissioner Tom Wall said that he's been following the what's called the LEAP District Program project in Boone County, Indiana, being developed by the Indiana Economic Development Corporation. And the Boone County facility that's been designed doesn't have enough water capacity to meet the demand that's being engineered for that industrial park. So they're talking about piping water to the tune of 1 million gallons per day from West Lafayette, 35 miles away, to get to Boone County. And for us, we need to be concerned just simply because it's, there's an upper and lower basin to the Wabash River corridor, but it's all based on the Wabash alluvial aquifer, and that's the aquifer that we use. It's the aquifer that they're talking about pulling this water from Lafayette to send down to Boone County. And so when you think about the fact that we have a little over 8 million gallons per day capacity, and there's one project in Boone County on the same aquifer that's going to use 1 million gallons of water per day, it behooves us to make sure that we know what we're talking about in terms of our own usage. And then if somebody asks us a question downstate about what it means to tap the aquifer, we've got data that we can use to respond with. In addition, the thing to me, just kind of, and this is just me thinking out loud, but the Boone County project is primarily, their primary tenant in that park is Eli Lilly. Mm-hmm. One of the most important companies, obviously, to the state of Indiana, and frankly the world, with the products they make. Well, little old me would hope that a company like that, with basically the finest chemists on earth, might be able to figure out how to commercialize. I mean, what is water? It's two parts hydrogen, one part water. Two parts hydrogen, one part oxygen.
Gotcha.
H2O.
Yes.
Well, that's an interesting recipe if you can figure out how to make it.
Indeed.
And if you're the best chemist on the planet, I would encourage them to kind of think about that. Can you imagine the breakthrough for global health if a company like Eli Lilly could figure out how to combine two molecules of hydrogen with one molecule of oxygen and create water from air? And when you think about it, that's exactly what NASA does with the spaceships that go up. They have to figure out how to create water for the astronauts. It's a significantly smaller adventure in the sense of capacity, but the technology isn't as crazy as we might think. And so, as opposed to running water lines with 1950s technology 35 miles, boy, it'd be great if they could figure out how to create something new that would help everybody on the planet. But at the fundamental here, geology was something that we learned a lot about in the report. And I want to start by just kind of pull up the summary of the report. The county, Huntington County, consists generally, geologically speaking, and frankly, we just look around and we see it. We're We're primarily an agricultural area with land that's generally flat. We all know the Wabash River flows through the northern portion of the county. The Salamone River flows through the southern portion. The Roush Lake Dam on the Wabash River impounds water to create the Roush Lake Fish and Wildlife Area. A second water impoundment in Huntington County is Salamone Lake. The dam for the lake is actually in Wabash County, but both were constructed for flood control and the respective rivers. And the main water body features of the county are associated with those. Our county also contains or is benefited by five unconsolidated aquifers. Those aquifers are called the Till Veneer, the Bluffton Till, the Bluffton Till Subsystem, the Bluffton Complex, and the Wabash Alluvial and Tributary Systems. There's one bedrock aquifer system called the Silurian and Danovian Aquifer. And these, you know, the aquifers can vary greatly in depth. And generally speaking, they range in Huntington County from somewhere around 25 feet to 250 feet below the surface. And Huntington County geologically also has thick clay deposits, or soil, that lies over the top of the bedrock system. That leads to a susceptibility, but it's actually a low susceptibility of contamination from surface contaminants because the clay acts as a filter and they're pretty thick. And then historically, the county lies within, and you see this river valley in essence as you're heading between Fort Wayne and Huntington, the whole Wabash corridor. The elevation change, it's referred to as the Tays River Valley. This river valley was drained by the preglacial Kanawha River that drained the majority of northern Indiana and Ohio. And so finally, I mentioned earlier as an introduction, the Boone County Project, and as a result, there is a water study taking place sponsored by the state of Indiana and the Indiana Finance Authority, looking at both the upper Wabash Basin as well as the lower Wabash Basin and the demand levels in central Indiana. So part of what another thing that we learned in the study is the difference between design capacity of the infrastructure versus what we're actually demanding and using as consumers. Communities regularly file water usage journals with the Indiana Department of Environmental Management and summarize that so they compare design capacity with existing infrastructure versus, and then even in design capacity, it's a function of looking at, whether you're talking about the peak demand or the average daily usage and so forth. And What the state of Indiana has as a rule basically is that if a community's demand reaches 80% of the designed capacity, they're going to get a letter from the state. That municipality is going to get a letter from the state saying you need to handle this a little bit different. But the truth is, we're in pretty good shape, assuming routine growth, assuming no issues with surrounding counties and users, et cetera, that are not manageable. So, for example, at the city of Huntington, we learned that their total treated water capacity, is 6.3 million gallons per day. And they have an available margin, if you will, between what's being demanded and what we've designed, with 2.51 million gallons still available to use. So we're in pretty good shape on capacity in the city of Huntington. And as you look through the county at Roanoke, Warren, Markle, Andrews, you see what you would expect in terms of smaller populations, smaller water systems as a result, but still having available capacity to work with. So as you look through the, you know, I mentioned the water towers and the number of them. The city of Huntington has 4 elevated storage tanks. The town of Roanoke has 2 storage tanks. The town of Andrews has 1. Town of Markle has 2. And the town of Warren has 2. And we're really fortunate in the Midwest because we simply don't have to deal with what the Western states do with population growth in areas that have water shortages in the first place. So what are the key summaries in wrapping all this up? Well, point number one, for everybody to understand, is that in Huntington County, generally speaking, our citizens, we obviously demand safe and ample drinking water, and the municipalities have to make it, and we have a good system. We have capacity, and we have quality. We always need to improve. The town of Andrews is going through that. The city of Huntington's debating some changes as well. Town of Roanoke just went through a debate. But that's part of, hey, we have to be able to meet our own consumer demands and have good quality process and build in some growth to the system. So that's kind of point number one. Point number two is that the aquifer capacity itself, as we deal with all these questions, is actually kind of difficult to predict. For example, okay, the whole point here is we know how much we've designed our systems to produce. We know what our current usage is. So then the question becomes, how quickly does the aquifer or the wells actually recharge? And the answer is it varies. I mean, obviously this week when we've had about 2 inches of rain, the recharge is a lot faster than during times of drought. So the engineers' predictive models on this topic assume drought statistics at the low end. So it isn't an exact science. You can't drop a camera underground and take pictures of how much water there is and have an accurate measure. You can only estimate and use the dynamics that you know. Third point is, how should we plan for growth? And what do we need? And the only way we can do that is to know what our current situation is, what our aquifer forecasts are, and that information needs to be as accurate as possible, combined with the question of how to pay for things. And so finally, again, the infrastructure is expensive, but we have to have it. We don't have a choice. I suppose if we have one fault in our county, it's that our society, our population, and some are better than others, obviously, but, you know, we don't tend to enjoy budgeting for deferred maintenance. We don't tend to enjoy paying for maintenance and ongoing depreciation costs. What we tend to understand and do is we get an asset, we use it until it breaks, and then we replace it. And when we get to that point with drinking water, we're not going to like the outcome, quite frankly. So we have to kind of plug our noses sometimes and make decisions that we'd prefer not to make. They're expensive to do. But the truth is, if you use a water system until you run out or until you break it, no one's going to like the result. So
it has to be preemptive to keep that from happening.
Yep. So that's the responsible thing to do in public policy, and that's what the elected officials do, and sometimes they get yelled at. I understand that. I don't like to see costs go up either. But I'd rather yell at them about managing costs than yelling at them because I've got arsenic in my water or I don't have water at all.
Yeah, that would definitely present itself as a problem.
So,
but it seems like we're doing good. We're not experiencing like what Thornton, Colorado has, where there has to be water rations or water limits.
Correct. We're nowhere near any of that. Even if the Boone County project goes forward and they've made math errors, we're still fine. We're blessed with a lot of water here. One of the obligations I think we have in stewardship of the water is to just make sure we're not polluting it with stuff that can't be fixed.
Exactly. Exactly. So. Well, another great informative program, and I appreciate it.
Thank you. We'll be back next week.
All right, let's get back into the music right here on the Z.